a safer country, and it's in God we trust. So we'll bomb you during Ramadan, turn your world into dust. But pull up on your bootstraps, stand on your own 2 feet, as we blow them off with cluster bombs disguised as something to eat. We stand for freedom and prosperity, so we'll bomb your schools and hospitals, make sure you live in liberty. And all you evildoers, and your children and your wives, with our B-52s we'll show you how we value civilian lives. Give us your hungry, your restless, we'll show you democracy, a military trial, and detention indefinitely. We'll have homeland security, Thomas Ridge, all hail. We may not find the terrorists, but we can throw the left in jail, and we will all be safe, and we shall have no fears, once our retinas have been scanned, and all the walls have ears, and we're all in good hands. When the FBI is in the know, we're sure they'll look after us, just like they did with COINTELPRO. So hang a flag in the window, all hail to the chief. Follow the leader and suspend your disbelief. Our country, right or wrong, you know what to do. Sing, God bless America, that red, white, and blue. When facing anyone with box cutters, we'll say put up your dukes, as we spend $50 billion on bombers and nukes. We're a beacon of light, and just to make the point, we'll cut taxes on the rich and throw the poor into the joint. And we'll bail out the airlines, get out your green fedoras, and for all you laid off workers, we've got maquiladoras. Yes, capitalism will save us, for have you ever seen a more convincing proof than Enron in Argentina? So hang a flag in the window, all hail to the chief. Follow the leader and suspend your disbelief. Our country, right or wrong, you know what to do. Sing, God bless America, that red, white, and blue. Axis of evil, we'll bomb them down the skids. There'll be no more terrorists once we kill their kids. People may starve and economies may crumble, but those folks will just have to learn to be more humble and give us your money, debt repayments with aplomb, while we scour the map for a country left to bomb. And as another city falls on our sacred American soil, at least we've got our daisy cutters and that Alaskan oil. So hang a flag in the window, all hail to the chief. Follow the leader and suspend your disbelief. Our country, right or wrong, you know what to do. Sing, God bless America, that red, white, and blue.
All right, welcome back. This is NATO Solidarity. My name is Urkar, and I am talking to Naguset. She works with the Native Women's Shelter here in Montreal. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell me about it. What is it that you do at the Native Women's Shelter?
What do I do at the Native Women's Shelter?
Yeah.
Well, I'm the executive director, so for me, I need to secure funding for the shelter, for different projects that we have. But the shelter is a place where Native women, Inuit women, and Métis women have a safe and supportive environment for women and their children. We're a little haven for them in Montreal.
What is the history concerning the Native Women's Shelter? How long has it been around?
We first got incorporated in 1987. Before that, there was a needs assessment done at the Native Friendship Center, and that was the beginning. People at the who worked at the Native Friendship Center saw that there was a need for a Native women's shelter, so they started the ball rolling by having this needs assessment, and then from there to become incorporated and to get funding to have the shelter. So 1987, that's quite a while that we've been open, almost 18 years.
Well, 18 years. Well, it's a good service that needs to be provided, considering that there are a lot of Native women on the streets and all that. And what are the exact the services? Is there like drug abuse services, alcohol abuse? Do you provide those kind of services too?
No. What we do is we do a lot of referrals. We're basically sort of hands-on, help them with through the crises they're going through, and then refer them to the proper services. So if a woman is in need of a psychologist, we'll find that. If they need to go to a treatment center, we can try to get in touch with Onondaga Treatment Center, which is a treatment center up in Gunasatage, or find one that's they have one that caters to Inuit women. I believe that's in Kujawak. So that's what we try to do, is find the proper services for them.
So in other words, you're kind of like a base for like services and stuff like that. You can make sure that they, if they're going to come to you, that you'll be able to refer them to the right place or even help them yourselves.
Absolutely. But with certain things like drugs and alcohol, it's better that we refer them. We have a shelter that has 16 rooms. So we can have up to 16 women and children at a time. And we supply, we have like a clothing depot, we have a cook that makes food for them, and what other services that they need, if they need to call to their communities to get help there, any other resources that need in the city for, you know, going to see a doctor or a dentist or a lawyer, we can escort them to different appointments if they need the support or just to go with someone. Sometimes it's really intimidating to come from a different community into the city and going to have to see a lawyer or even a welfare agent if they don't actually speak the French language. There's a lot of racism in the city. And
Oh, yeah.
So we're there to help them through all these really difficult transitions that they're going through.
Now, let's see. What can the public do for when it comes to helping? Do you accept donations?
Mm-hmm.
Or
absolutely. We have a website. It's www.nwsm.info. So if you wanted to take a look at our website, it also talks about a couple of other services that we have at the shelter. We've been very lucky to receive monies through Human Resources Development Skills Canada. So we have an outreach worker. So when the women have finished their stay at the shelter, we have an outreach worker who will go and visit them on the outside in their home and give them the exact same services they would have received at the shelter. Even additional services. So if a woman is having a hard time financially, the outreach worker can go and buy them groceries. And she can also take them to the other types of appointments, even help them to get an education, going to Concordia or McGill, finding out the services or the making the steps to do applications, helping them get funding to go to school, because most status Indians get monies from their band to go to schools, which is actually more money than you would get on welfare. So
yeah.
When a woman is ready to pursue that, we're there to help them through all the steps.
Now, a lot of these women, are they running sometimes from violence? Is that have you had that kind of a problem?
Absolutely, some of them are. But every single woman that comes in comes under different circumstances. We have a large population that comes in that are sort of transient, that come through the city thinking that they may find more happiness in the city of Montreal than they would in their communities, and end up becoming homeless. So a large population at the shelter are those types of clientele that come in, or residents that come in and come to Montreal and see that there is no happy ending here. Then we try to help them through the steps to find that. But a lot of them think that they're going to find something better here, and because of the racism, they don't actually find that right away. I mean, I think it is definitely possible to do that, but anyways, this is a lot of the clientele. It's the clients are homeless. Sometimes also clients come from different communities if they don't have the proper medical equipment. So if someone needed a MRI and they didn't have the equipment in the community, they would come to Montreal and go to Montreal General Hospital. So they would come through for that particular reason. And sometimes it is because of violence.
Yeah. Well, violence is part of everyday life on the
Absolutely.
Reserve.
I would say that every single woman who have come through our door has been a victim of violence, but that may not necessarily be the reason why they're there at that moment.
Okay. Now, I noticed it's like when you talked about the medical.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I have a friend from one of the Cree reserves up north.
Mm-hmm.
His name is John Bearskin. Mm-hmm. He works with as a translator at mm-hmm. the Children's Hospital.
Okay.
So you help them also with when it comes to medical translation, so that because the racism is, it's huge. It's a really big problem.
Mm-hmm. Actually, one of our outreach, the outreach worker, she once took a client asked her to help her to go to welfare because she had gone on her own, and the welfare agent took a look at her and told her to go to the immigration office. She just assumed that she was, I don't know what, something else. And the outreach worker went through with her and explained, you know, that she's First Nations and helped her with the application there. This is why there's a possibility that First Nations can become homeless on welfare, because if you don't understand the documents that you get, they're all in French, and you don't fill them out properly, you're not going to get your welfare.
Oh, and they'd love to scrutinize those agents. They're very good at scrutinizing mm-hmm. the kind of...
Mm-hmm.
It's basic racism. They take mm-hmm. one look. They take a look at your the color of your skin. But because, and I've noticed this, and I might be reaching here, but I've noticed that African Americans don't get it anywhere near as bad as Native Americans do, because there's a huge stigma mm-hmm. when it comes to poking at African Americans that isn't exactly there when it comes to Native Americans. It's like our voice isn't loud enough. And I've noticed that there's selective racism, especially in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And it, thank God for the African community with their speakers. They've been able to curb mm-hmm. a lot of that racism, because they've got a lot of people in the community who just will raise their voice and talk. But unfortunately, our community doesn't have that. It doesn't have a lot of people to just like speak for us, and thank goodness you guys are there, because mm-hmm. if you guys weren't there and the Native Friendship Center wasn't there, there'd be a lot more problems, because like you said, they don't a lot of them don't speak the language to come from up the villages,
mm-hmm.
especially the elders who need medical attention. They can't speak French or English,
mm-hmm.
and they're kind of, it's in a way, it's sad that the services aren't provided
mm-hmm.
in our languages. And thank God for people like John Bearskin, who can do a lot of the translating.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to take a little musical break, and we're going to come back. We're speaking with Naguset from the Native Women's Shelter.
The army commander spoke to the media. He said, "This is a nation of laws. We do not target civilians, and we only bomb with cause." And he said, as he looked into the camera with a cold, bone-chilling stare, "As for the village of Kamaato, nothing happened there. In the village where nothing happened, most people had risen from bed. Women were preparing to cook and make sure every mouth would be fed. Just before the beginning of Ramadan, water was set out to boil. Little fires were heating tin kettles upon the dry Afghan soil. In the village where nothing happened, children played in the street. Men were bending in prayer, some with no shoes on their feet. It was another day like so many that had gone down before, and nobody told Camarado just what lay in store. Would be changed forever by an American B-52. The bombs fell all around them, so many a deafening blast, and the people of Camarado learned that life can end so fast. In the village where nothing happened, the houses collapsed in the morn. Not one terrorist died there, but maybe some were born. In the village of Camarado, there are no underground caves. There's just rubble and dust and craters and 115 new graves.
Okay, we're back. We're talking with Naguset, a woman who works with the Native Women's Shelter. And just before the break, we were talking about racism and what it is doing to our people when it comes to getting just basic services, basic human rights. Now, you mentioned that you had an idea.
Yeah, I noticed, you know, I've been at the shelter for the last 6 years, and I've done many different jobs at the shelter, so working with the clients and seeing the barriers that they have. And myself and the president of the Native Women's Shelter, Ida Labilawaz Montour, met with Jeff Kelly. He's the new Minister of Indian Affairs on the provincial level. And I talked to him about the issues that the First Nations and Inuit women and Métis women are facing. And I've noticed that it seems to be almost global in the city of Montreal, that it's not just the services the women are having difficulty receiving, you know, they're with welfare. I think there's also a misunderstanding with the police, with the hospitals. Just almost, there's so many different youth protection. So what I was thinking that we need to do or start doing is educating a lot of different service providers. So you know, if youth protection were to understand the differences between First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, and the different cultures, the background, how did they, you know, what is the difference between an Inuit and a First Nations woman? I mean, there are so many children that are in foster care, and the number seems to be growing. So what do they need to do in order to help the numbers become lower? What are the barriers that the women have with the police if they need help? We have had a couple of run-ins with the police where sometimes the police have to come to the shelter, and some of them have been positive, but there have been a couple of instances where they haven't been positive. And there was one instance where the police came to help youth protection apprehend a child, which sometimes happens, but they had 10 police officers. You don't need 10 police officers to apprehend a child, and this is a baby we're talking about. So what are, you know, the women become scared of the police. They don't see them in a positive light. So if they need help from the police, are they going to go to them?
Yeah, well, it's they're the bullies in blue, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a touch much. It's like to go after a child, you know, with 10 police officers, and those police officers are very large men, and they don't always have that attitude of warmth. You know, it's like you're coming to get a child. Act like an adult. Mm-hmm. Act like a warm adult who's actually concerned about the child, and not whether you're going to get to pull out your gun and look all tough and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Look responsible.
So I'm not saying that all the police officers are bad. I'm just saying a couple of instances.
Yeah.
So my idea is to actually have someone go into all the social service sectors and do almost like an awareness, an education about what First Nations people are, and to do it, I don't know, maybe every 3 months, every 4 months to go in, because there's a lot of turnover in a lot of these companies, so or organizations. So like youth protection, there's always a lot of turnover, the police, because they're high-stress jobs. But also to speak to the heads of all the different departments at the same time.
Yeah.
So if I were to speak to, as an executive director, if I were to speak to the executive director of BATSHA, of youth protection, of the police, to let them know, like, what kind of issues have you been seeing? What kind of barriers have your police officers had with First Nations people? What kind of, maybe we need to create some kind of manual that every service sector would have. So if they were to have an issue with, you know, A, B, and C, they would just turn to page and, okay, I know I need to call this person and that person. If you go to different communities, like if you were to go to Ontario, they have such a strong networking between all the service sectors that if a woman is abused, the police know to bring them to a certain hospital, the hospital knows to call the shelter. Sometimes the women fall between the cracks. There's so many shelters in Montreal, and there's only one Native women's shelter, but the women don't always end up at our shelter. They end up at a different one, and then it's the shelter who knows about us. So how come the police, why aren't we working in a stronger way, in a more sort of cohesive way? So this is sort of an idea that I had, that I had spoken to Jeff Kelly, and I'd sent him a proposal on this, and I'm waiting to hear if he has any types of ideas, or if he knows of any funding where we can secure this so we can hire someone to go and do all these different types of trainings throughout the city, and hopefully be received with open arms with all the different service providers.
And that way be able to expand even.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, because a service like a Native woman shelter, if there's only one and there's so many other shelters, and it would be beneficial to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And if Mr. Kelly's listening, it's a good idea. Trust me, it's a good idea. And also, you mentioned services earlier. What other services does the Native Women's Shelter provide?
The Native Women's Shelter, for the last 5 years, has received monies from the Aboriginal Healing Foundation. The Aboriginal Healing Foundation was set up because of a need of Aboriginal people who had been to residential school. So the government was able to give monies to this foundation, and the foundation allots money to different Native or Inuit organizations throughout Canada, and we've been very fortunate to receive money from them for the last 5 years, and we've been very lucky to be renewed again until 2007. So what that does, that money helps us to provide other services for the women. So women who have been sexually assaulted, we have a staff that works specifically with these women. Her name is Taline. She's wonderful, and she does workshops. She has an enormous amount of resources on sexual assault. Also, the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, we have a clinical supervisor. They provide the funding for that. So our clinical supervisor is Kim Daibo, and she works with all the frontline workers at the staff, keeps an eye on how everything is going, that everything is flowing well, that the staff are getting all the resources and information that they need in order to help the clients. And also we have a program coordinator, Carrie Martin, and she works to help put programs together for the women. So different activities, different workshops. She finds people from outside of the shelter who will come in and do workshops for free. We had someone who came in today and did a workshop on movement therapy. So we're very lucky to have the Aboriginal Healing Foundation to help us with these types of different projects. And I mean, you know, unfortunately with these projects is they run out. And after they run out, we need to find monies. So if anybody wants to donate money, take a look at our website. We have a donation form on that, on the website. We'd be happy to receive any type of donation, and we would give you a charitable receipt.
So what's that website again?
It's www.nwsm.info.
Great. Okay, so that is Nagoset. I'd like to thank you for coming to our show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
No problem.